This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
We all have a bucket list. Those things you want to see, do, eat, drink, experience before we kick the bucket. What's on my bucket list? There really isn't anything I want to own, but there are so many things I want to see and experience. High on my list is an African safari. The only trophies I want to bring home are memories and photos. But I'm afraid that window for seeing the Africa I envision. Free-roaming animals, a delicately balanced ecosystem, local populations who've tasted modern society and advances, but are still practicing traditions that are centuries old. Sadly, disease, climate change, political upheavals, crushing poverty, and a lack of opportunities are decimating people, animals, and the environment in much of Africa. Can one individual make a difference on the African continent? Yes. Can that difference be dramatically amplified if we act together? Most assuredly. My guest, Ralph Waterhouse, is an expert in leading safaris to Zambia and is raising awareness of the challenges this corner of paradise is facing. I hope you can help him make a difference. We'll be right back after this short break. Being a veterinarian is not all fuzzy kittens and cuddly puppies. There are a lot of stinky things I have to contend with, many of which get on me. There are times I know I must reek like a litter box when I leave the office. And if you have a cat like me, you know that nothing smells worse than a wet litter box. Luckily, Arm & Hammer has a solution. New Absorbix cat litter made with desert dry minerals. It absorbs wetness in seconds, taking that wet odor out of the picture. Go to armandhammer.com/bounty and get $4 off your box of quick absorbing Absorbix and have a nice, dry, unstinky day. New Absorbix from Arm & Hammer. More power to you.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Ralph Waterhouse, thank you for being with us today.
I'm very pleased to be with you, Dr. Cruz.
Well, number one, correct me if I'm wrong, you're somebody who was born here in the United States. How did you get involved in taking people to Africa to learn about Zambia and wildlife education?
Well, it was really a situation that I was a zoo director, and zoo directors lead African safaris and actually trips around the world in order to help their supporters learn more about wildlife in particular. In my case, I had the opportunity to travel to Zimbabwe with a group of other zoo directors. And that really was an introduction for me and my wife to Africa. After that first trip, we knew we would be returning as often as we possibly could. Anyone who's been to Africa, I think, will tell you by the African bug, it's not a disease, but it's a love of Africa. It's a love of the animals. It's a love of the people, the scenery, the landscapes, and of course, the adventure of being in an exotic place with wild animals all around you.
Again, this is on my bucket list and looking. I know you're still leading safaris and looking at the safaris that you lead. Yes, this is not roughing it. It is just fabulous. So you started off as a zoo director and it was up in Fresno. Is that correct?
That's right. That's where I finished my career.
Amazing. So you've led these people to Africa. You got bitten by the non-fatal Africa bug, wanted to go back. How many years have you been doing this now?
I've been doing it for about 33 years. Our first safari was in 1987. And since then, we've returned almost every year. And in one year, I was leading some safaris also for a local university. And that year, I had four safaris. So I've been to Africa roughly 35, 30, whatever. I don't actually keep track of it. I just look at the year I started and then figure it out from there.
I love it. And the way that I actually found out about you, your wife is a veterinarian, and yeah. I was at a California Veterinary Medical Association meeting, and I was seated across from this very stunning woman who had just some spectacular, very unique jewelry on. And I mentioned to her, wow, that is really a fabulous piece. Where did you get it? And I'm thinking, oh, someplace here in California where I can pick this up. And she says, oh, no, this cute little shop that was in Zimbabwe. And it's like, okay, well, it's going to be a while before I get to go visit that shop. But I'm still hoping that it's possible. So you've been to Zimbabwe, but now you say that your favorite destination is Zambia. And I think a lot of people looking at Africa going, I don't know where to go. You know, maybe I go to South Africa. Maybe I go to, I don't know where to go. How does somebody figure out where they should go? How did you choose Zambia?
Well, people, and I think the first location most people think of when you talk about African safari is probably Kenya. And that is a country that has wonderful wildlife. It's a great destination. People will come back from Kenya on their, from their first safari and tell you how marvelous it was, what a wonderful time they had. Everyone that's gone with us, and I've led safaris in Kenya many times, everyone that's gone with us after the Kenyan experience or after Tanzania, and we take them to Zambia, they all have the same kind of a reaction. It's, wow, we didn't realize it was so different here. But one of the key differences with Zambia is, and why we like it so much, is that there isn't competition to look at the wildlife. In some other countries, when you're in your Land Rover with your friends and you spot, let's say, a lion pride, and you stop by that lion pride, in some countries, within a few minutes, 5-10 minutes, there could be 5 or 6 or 10 or 20. The worst case I ever had was in southern Kenya. We spotted a rhino and her baby. And within about 5 minutes, there were 33 vehicles crowding around this poor rhino. It was gridlock in the African savannah. And you never have that sort of a situation in Zambia. Zambia still isn't well known for tourists. And I love that because there just aren't so many people. And by not having a lot of other vehicles around you, not having a lot of other people around you who may not care as much about the wildlife, your experience is much more special. In Zambia, it's not only that the wildlife is spectacular, there's a much greater variety of wildlife as far as, and also greater numbers of individual species. You'll get close to these animals. I'm talking very close, where a lion just might rub against the side of your vehicle. Maybe its tail will land right in your lap as it walks by.
All right. Some people are listening to this going, you know, I like going to zoos because I have this nice, safe distance between me and the animal. I can see it and, you know, smell it. But I don't have to worry about waking up in the middle of the night to find a lion in my tent or bugs crawling, you know, across my bed at night or across me during the day. How can you put those concerns to rest? Because, yes, I personally would love to have a lion tail in my lap.
Well, there are many, many different types of safaris you can take. You can take the rugged camping on the ground just under a mosquito net. And in that kind of a situation, you very well might have a very close-up experience with wildlife at night. Maybe a lion lying down right next to your mosquito net. I wouldn't really prefer that, but that could happen when you're on the really rugged safaris. The safaris we lead now are very, very comfortable safaris. Each of the tents or the huts that we stay in, flush toilets, have their own bathrooms, often will have double vanities, an indoor shower and tub, and an outdoor shower. They're most often elevated on stilts above the ground. The beds are comfortable. The space is comfortable. I mean, it's just not roughing it at all, but you are out in the wild. You're not in a situation like a hotel where there are hundreds and hundreds of people around you. In the camps we visit, you may have a camp with 16 people. Many of the camps you visit have a maximum of 8 people allowed. So our trips will generally have anywhere from 6 to 10 to 12 guests with us. And that just makes the experience wonderful. It's very personal, and it's something that is your experience that you will remember. It's going to be indelibly imprinted in your brain and also right in your heart.
Being a veterinarian, yes, I am drawn to seeing the various animals. So you think of, you know, the big five, the rhinos, the elephants, the lions, the giraffes, and I don't know what makes up the fifth. But what animals can people expect to see if they go on a safari, say, to Zambia?
You can see most of the animals in Zambia that you would see when visiting any of the other safari destinations in Kenya, Tanzania, Zimbabwe, or South Africa, or Botswana. However, there are some unique species that are only found in Zambia, in the Luangwa Valley. That's on the eastern side of Zambia. The valley is surrounded by an escarpment, and that escarpment has prevented many species of animals from entering into the valley, and also it's kept species that were in the valley from leaving that valley. So within the Luangwa Valley, there is a subspecies of giraffe that only exists there, and that giraffe is one of the largest of the various subspecies of giraffe, and its Thornycroft's giraffe is not well known by any means because of its very limited range, but it is a spectacular giraffe to be close to and to see. They are just massive, massive animals. And then there are also puku antelope, which are a smaller antelope that is found in the Luangwa Valley. It isn't found in many other places in Africa. It is found also in Botswana, but the primary location you can find that is in Zambia. There are leopards, like you can't count how many leopards. Zambia is noted for a lot of leopards, and that's one of the fun things to do is to see leopards in the wild, watch the leopards and watch them carry an antelope up in the tree. Just be able to watch the animals and do that in a very quiet way.
Ralph, what's people listening to this going, all right, seeing these animals, fabulous. It sounds like the camps are wonderful. You know, they have a lot. It's glamping. So it's not just camping. It's somewhat glamorous camping. You really are well taken care of. And I can imagine the food is spectacular also. But the hearing about, you know, leopards that are out there and the lions, like, how am I know I'm going to be safe?
Well, Dr. Cruz, you will be safe as long as you follow the rules. And the rules are quite simple. Never leave camp on foot. The only time you're ever away from camp is when you're with a guide. If you listen to the guide's instructions, you will be very, very safe. You do not have anything to worry about at all. When you're asleep in your tent or your hut at night, you may hear lions, you may hear leopard. There'll be many places, hippos walking right around your tent. Lots of elephants wander through camp. As long as you stay inside your tent, you do not have anything at all to be concerned about. I've woken up in the middle of the night just startled by the very loud roaring of a lion, and it was within 100 feet of our tent. I thought it was sitting right on top of me by the sound. But you don't walk out of the tent. You don't shine your light out of the tent, but you can be very quiet and just watch the lions. You can watch any of the wildlife wandering through camp while you're inside your tent. During the daytime, in most places, you can walk from your tent to the main dining area, the main gathering area, and just pay close attention to what's around you. Or you can have a guide walk you back and forth when you go into your tents. Again, as long as you're paying attention and doing what the guides tell you to do, you have nothing at all to worry about. When we're in vehicles, and again, Zambia is quite unique in the fact that the vehicles have no doors, no sides, no tops, which gives, obviously, everyone a window seat. That gives the experience, you know, an added edge. You feel more vulnerable because there's nothing between you and any of the wildlife. But on the other hand, you also experience that wildlife in, I think, a much deeper way. You can feel the elephants communicating in their very subsonic vocalizations between each other over great distances. You actually can feel the vibration in your body as they're walking by. It's really such a wonderful experience. Now, when I mentioned to you that maybe a lion's tail will fall in your lap while it walks by, that has happened to our son and to various other people if they're sitting in the low seat next to the guide, the passenger seat. However, as long as you stay in the vehicle, you don't try to pet the animals. You don't put your foot out. You don't put your arm out. You sit there. You, the other people in the vehicle, tend to look like one entity to the animals. And this entity never provides food to them. It never harms them. The vehicle going past the animals might as well be a tumbleweed just slowly rolling right through their habitat, because they really don't pay attention to you. We've driven up to a pride of 22, 23 lions lying on a riverbank with cubs playing and wrestling and all of that. And as we drove right up into the middle of this pride, a mother who was nursing kind of raised her head, saw that we, you know, this tumbleweed had rolled in, put her head back down and continued nursing. They just don't pay attention to you in Zambia because people don't feed them. They don't harm them from these vehicles. So the animals just don't have any reason to be attracted to you as an individual. If you stand up in a vehicle and wave your arms and hollering and bouncing all around, then you become an individual thing that looks like it could be taken out of that other vehicle. So that's one thing you'd never do. You never stand up. You don't make a lot of noise, but you can sit and observe the animals very quietly, very respectfully, and just observe them for a very long time. Another advantage of going in a small group with people who are very interested in wildlife is that the guides in Zambia are outstanding. They have nowhere else to be than to guide you on the kind of a trip that you want to have. In our case, people who go with us are very interested in wildlife. As such, we may stop and watch elephants in a mud bath for an hour, just sit quietly and watch them. It's so interesting. It's so much fun to watch. There's so much going on there that most people, let's say in other countries or their safaris, really miss, because they're on a time schedule of go out, see the animals, get back for lunch. You know, they have to take a break. You have to do this, do that at this time or that time. It isn't that way on our safaris, or it isn't that way in Zambia. The time you spend is your time. If you see the elephants and you've seen them all you want, the guide will move on and keep looking for other wildlife for you. But it's your experience. It's very personal kind of an experience. The guides are outstanding. They are so knowledgeable about all of the wildlife, about the plants, about the ecology of the location, about the languages of all the people in the area. They're just outstanding.
Well, this is, yes, my bucket list is now just flowing over. And you're talking about spending time. Well, I love spending time with you, Ralph Waterhouse. We're going to have to take a short break. We're going to be right back talking more about Zambia, safaris, and you talked about the Luangwa Valley.
Luangwa, correct, yeah.
I'll have to do that again. And about something really special that's going on there right now. So we'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Looking for a dental treat that does more for your dog? Daily Dose is a 2-in-1 chew that pairs a daily dental scrub with powerful supplements to help with the biggest health concerns facing our dogs. Daily Dose was developed by vets to be simple to use and super effective. Plus, dogs love the taste. Available for joint, skin, heart health, or calming. Daily Dose, your pet's daily dose of awesome. Visit yourpetsdailydose.com to save $3 on your first bag with promo code PETLIFE. That's yourpetsdailydose.com.
I have a chocolate cocker spaniel named Lady and a blackmouth cur, and it's a lot of responsibility owning a dog. My dogs don't have any health problems because they're eating what they need to eat.
DINOVITE.com.
Dynavite is like pouring a multivitamin right onto their food. We'll be scooping our Dynavite, then squirting the liquor chops and the fish oil. They start salivating.
You won't believe how happy your dog will be.
I get my Dynavite at DINOVITE.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio. PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Okay, Ralph, as I said, I am just now even more excited about doing this. But I learned about your safari company bringing to people's attention this Walk Luanga 2020. Tell us a little bit about it, what it's doing, why it's important.
Dr. Cruz, the walk actually just recently ended, but it was a walk of 350 kilometers over a 17-day period through wild African bush. And to put this in perspective, easier to understand for Americans, 350 kilometers is 217 miles over 17 days.
And this is all on foot?
And it's all on foot.
Wow.
And you carry your own packs, you carry your own food, your own tent, carry your own water. And the walk was primarily with game rangers, with anti-poaching patrol rangers, and then just select other people. One of our good friends is a safari organizer within Africa, and he decided he would take 2 days away from his business and walk. At the end of the first day, they came across an elephant that had been killed and poached of its ivory tusks, which is just terrible to see firsthand. But that was a reminder to the folks on that walk why they were doing that walk. They were trying to raise about 200,000 British pounds or 261,000 US dollars, which would help to keep the wildlife protectors and the rangers on patrol in the parks and help to assist the local villages, remote villages that are so devastated, not only by COVID, but also with the lack of tourism because of COVID. There are photos that you can see of the walk, and there's also a link to a website where you can contribute to the Walk Luangwa.
So even though the walk is over, people still can contribute, is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. And it is desperate. Your donation is desperately needed. I encourage all of our friends to donate. It's a very safe way to donate. The website is very secure, and it's a website that handles contributions for a number of not-for-profit foundations. So it's something very secure, and you can feel safe donating your dollars in that way.
So you mentioned COVID-19 is being a major impact in this area right now because people aren't able to travel. Are the residents of that area, are they being impacted personally with COVID-19? Do you have any idea?
They are. And particularly in the bigger cities, just like in the U.S., COVID is prevalent and people are also practicing social distancing, wearing masks, washing their hands as often as they can. However, when you get into the remote villages that are nearest the national parks where the animals are, it's very difficult for the people there. In many, many cases, they do not have running water. They don't have clean drinking water. They certainly don't have masks. They have heard about COVID. And as far as I've seen, they try as best as they can to only stay with their family, except when they absolutely need to get out to do something to gather food or do something else where there may be other people around. But they are directly affected and are being very careful. However, because of COVID, visitors are not traveling and there are restrictions to even entering the country. Just like many countries around the world, we don't want to bring more virus into our own country. So it's just been devastating without tourism in Zambia, without tourism in the villages which surround the national parks. With no tourism, there's no money coming in, no cash to purchase food, no cash to be able to send your children to school, that sort of thing. It's been devastating.
Ralph, we're also wondering, we've heard of some zoos that have problems with their large cats being affected with the COVID virus. We know that cats and ferrets and minks and some dogs have also contracted it. They're not spreading it. They're getting it from people. So we have to be so careful that way. Do you know, have any of the wildlife there in the Zambia area been affected by COVID individually?
Not to my knowledge. And it would be very difficult if they were, very difficult to even know that, because there isn't any kind of veterinary evaluations going on or testing of the animals. So it doesn't seem that there's been COVID in the wild animal populations, but we honestly don't know because there really isn't a way to be able to determine that.
I was noticing in some of the photographs from the walk that there were dog patrols, and I found that interesting. So how are these dogs used in protecting the wildlife?
That is something that's fairly new. Those dogs are very well trained as tracking dogs. And in many cases, the Belgian Malinois, they are trained not only for tracking, but also for catching and holding poachers. They also use bloodhounds and some other dogs as tracking dogs. Those dogs are trained for a variety of purposes, but primarily for the anti-poaching patrols. They could also be used to sniff out tusks or rhino horn, specifically to find the cache that poachers have been developing with all of their animal parts that they've been catching. But the dogs, again, are a relatively recent kind of an activity, and that has changed the way that the anti-poaching patrols can work. The dogs have given them additional resources, additional senses in order to be able to find poacher activity going on. Fortunately, in Zambia, through contributions from people like those on our safaris, but also groups, Rotary clubs, Lions clubs, various communities around the world contributing dollars to help to outfit the rangers who are looking out for the poachers over the years. So now most of the rangers have proper shoes. When I first started going to Africa, many of the rangers did not have shoes. Some had rifles, were World War I, World War II vintage rifles. Some cases, I don't think they could even work. They didn't have proper clothing. They definitely did not have mosquito netting or any of the protective equipment they needed. Nowadays, that's really turned around. In some places, they have GPS and they have flights at night by light aircraft that are scanning for specifically for heat imprints that they would, campfires, for instance, where they would be looking for poachers because they know that no one would be allowed in the national park out of the designated camping areas or designated camps. So there are a number of different ways that rangers are using nowadays in order to be able to do a better job of protecting the wildlife. But as we talked just a minute ago, that COVID has devastated tourism. Without the funding coming in, the anti-poaching patrols are not funded any longer. The rangers have to stay home to try to take care of their own families, to grow their own food. They don't have the ability without money to be able to continue on their anti-poaching patrols. So without tourist eyes in the park, without the guides and the vehicles and the anti-poaching patrols, poaching is on the increase, a very sharp increase since COVID has hit. And that is just devastating. That's just horrible to think about. And in most cases, it is not the local villagers who are doing this. Many people have this misimpression, mistaken belief that the people who are doing the poaching are the poor people who live in the villages. And that's really not the case for the ivory, for the rhino horn. Those activities are conducted by very highly organized crime syndicates. It isn't the local people. Local people, when they're starving, they may set a trap to catch an antelope, but they're not the ones who are going after the big game for purposes of sending it out of the country.
So there really is a connection between tourism and wildlife conservation, keeping these wildlife protectors there in the fields, making sure that everything's okay. And then we were talking earlier about climate change, how that's affecting Africa. I was reading a book, and it came out several years ago, called Cry of the Kalahari by Delia Owens. And yeah, there was parts of it I didn't even really want to read because it was just like so sad. But this is part of the world and things are changing and getting absolutely so dry. What's happening there in your part of Africa with climate change, Zambia?
Climate change, yeah, in Zambia, it's very apparent. And I'll just say that it's very apparent all over Africa. and it has similar impacts all over Africa. But one of the things that is just really, and I say devastating again, the local villages, is that people have relied upon the predictable seasonal changes in the weather, for instance. Over hundreds of thousands of years, we've developed particular types of plants that we use for food, corn, maize, a variety of other things. We know when to plant the seeds because we've known over thousands of years when the rains are going to come. We know when to harvest because we know when the colder weather is going to come or the winter rains are going to come that would spoil the food. But with climate change, everything's been knocked out of whack. People no longer know when they're going to get the rains. They'll plant the seeds when they would normally plant the seeds, but maybe no rains will come, or maybe floods will come and wash all of the seeds away. One has to remember that in the rural villages, their crops can be their annual food supply. So the climate change, the vast and enormous changes in the weather patterns can, in just an instant of a flood, for instance, can take away a family's food supply. The effect of flooding is not only causing problems by washing villages away or just burying fields and crops, but also causes severe erosion. And the erosion of productive soil is also something that can't be replaced very quickly. The wells that some of the villages have that could provide clean drinking water have also been flooded and therefore destroyed by floodwaters, by contaminating the deep wells. There is a book that is called Climate Justice. It was written by Mary Robinson. She's the former president of Ireland, a UN Special Envoy on Climate Change. You should read that book because that book relates stories of individual women in African villages. These women have now become leaders within their communities talking about climate change and how to help to mitigate the impacts within the villages. So the book is a compilation of stories, and Mary Robinson selected women because they tend to be those that are most affected in the families because they're the ones who are collecting the food, planting the crops, doing all of those things. So you really should read Climate Justice. It describes everything I've been talking about in much more detail about the impact of these vast changes in the weather.
So Climate Justice by Mary Robinson.
Yes.
Definitely. Okay. Thank you. Correct. Well, Ralph, this has been fascinating. It's been sobering. Everything you're telling us about Zambia, the walk. Can you tell us again about where people can get information on this special walk that has already taken place and how they can contribute?
I think that you have a link on the podcast, is that correct?
Yes, we will have that.
And the address is justgiving, JustGiving.com and /crowdfunding/Zambian-ground-handlers. And if you get that far, then you'll be able to find the individual page. And my friend is Zambian Ground Handlers. That's his business that provides the logistics for tours coming into Zambia. His company
we'll also have links for some great photos, too.
Yes.
Well, Ralph, this has been wonderful. Thank you very much for enlightening us what's been going on in Zambia. This special walk, if I can do this correctly, Walk Luangwa. Luangwa?
Yes, Walk Luangwa 2020.
Great. And you're still on my bucket list, and don't give up leading safaris. I still need to take one of these safaris with you.
You certainly do, Dr. Cruz. You will love it.
This is Dr. Bernadine Cruz. You've been listening to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. Please tune in again next week. We'll give you more information on how to make you the best possible pet owner and also an enlightened pet owner. Take care.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.